We are joined now in the studio by Max Orr of Carolina Public Humanities for another round of Oh, the Humanities. We've also got a special guest here in the studio, which I'll let Max introduce in just a minute. But Max, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you so much for having me again. It's always a pleasure being here. And you know I bring you gifts.
Yes.
Related to today's date of December 18th. And on this day, December 18th in 1892, Aaron, it was the first performance of the Nutcracker in St. Petersburg,
you
Russia.
You know, I've still never seen that in my life.
Well, if you went to the first version of it in 1892, the reviews included the words ponderous, insipid, and this lovely line, quote, "One cannot understand anything, disorderly pushing about from corner to corner and running backwards and forwards. Quite amateurish," end quote.
Yeah, but it was more than 100 years ago, so I assume all of those words meant very different things than they do today. Yeah.
I think it took a little bit, it wasn't really performed in the United States until the 1930s, and of course, George Balanchine's version, which most people are familiar with, was first put on in 1954, and of course, has become this winter tradition in the United States, but it's really only in the United States that people do this Nutcracker thing during the holidays.
Every country has its own cool/weird winter tradition.
You know, they take this one from Russia and it's become an American tradition. So that happened on this day, and also on this day, and this ties into our guest, it's Steven Spielberg's birthday today.
Oh.
He turns, I believe, 71 years old if I'm doing my math right. He was born in 1946.
Yep.
He has made a few movies, which brings us to our guest.
Yes.
And it's our dear friend and colleague, Rachel Jones Shavitz. She is the postdoctoral scholar for the public humanities at Carolina Public Humanities. She is also a brand new council person for the town of Chapel
Congratulations,
Hill.
Congratulations, by the way.
Rachel.
Yeah.
But I brought her here today because I wanted to talk about winter-themed cultural items. And Rachel is a scholar of film, so she's brought some winter-themed films.
Awesome.
And I have some books as well.
Very cool. So, Rachel, first of all, congratulations.
Thanks.
And enjoy this, because this might be like literally the one time in the next 4 years when you're on here where we're not throwing questions at you
that's fine.
Obscure minutia of town government.
Just obscure minutia of film this time around.
This works. So tell us about your background research-wise. How'd you get into film study?
Sure. I'm one of those annoying people who always knew what they wanted to do. I've loved movies since I was little. I went to NYU Film School in undergrad and then worked in the film business for a couple of years in the independent film world in New York. Did my stint in LA, which you have to do to just get it out of your system or figure it out if it's for you. It was not for me. Got my master's in Boston and my doctorate at Temple University in Philly.
Cool.
And I've been teaching film or making film my entire adult life.
Really? Cool. That's So what within the film studies industry do you specialize in?
I teach social justice filmmaking at Carolina, so I try to help students think about ways to sort of harness film and use it for good. Use it to tell stories that aren't usually told, or find ways to make the world a better place, or something along those lines. In film history, I really love looking at sort of the long arc of film history. It's always been a business. People kind of tend to forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so upset with all the remixes and sequels and tired things they see at the film at the box office today, but it's not any different than it used to be. It's just a different model of making money. And so I try to look at how we can learn about what society was like by looking at what films made money in the 1920s, let's say, or the 1950s. What did society expect or accept based on ticket sales and box office? So sort of taking a financial economic look at film as an artifact of history, and how we can learn about who got to tell stories and what stories did they get to tell.
Oh, that's fascinating. So what did make money in the 20s? What do you learn from studying like film in the 1920s about that?
I just did a talk for Carolina Public Humanities a couple weeks ago that traced the role of the heroine, like a female hero, from silent film all the way up to like Katniss and sort of these Rock'em Sock'em action heroines that we have today. And looking at...
I mean, Katniss is old news, Ray.
I know,
the movie
she's
just
so
came
true.
Out.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Katniss because I have a Jennifer Lawrence film in my list, so she was on my mind. But she's a huge... she's a very different kind of heroine than we would have seen in the silent film era. To your question, what made money back then, the three kinds of female characters that people loved were sort of the tomboy with a heart of gold character.
Okay.
The vamp, the like totally evil, wanton seductress who's just going to
take you down
to
the
depths of hell, but you're going to love every second of it kind of heroine. And then the damsel in distress.
Okay.
Who needs to be rescued often by... Well, always by a man.
Let's be real about it, of course.
And so that's why Katniss and Ripley and a lot of heroines that have been during my lifetime are such a departure from these chronically endangered women that were the female characters we saw.
Is that like a slow evolution, or is there like a moment like, oh, Alien comes out
Alien
and that's
a big
break?
Alien is a big moment for sure, but it's definitely sort of pendulum swings that follow society in a lot of other ways. So during World War II, we see a lot of fast-talking dames and career gals because that's reflective of what we had in our society. But as soon as the boys come back, then we get Marilyn Monroe. We get Doris Day. We get really vapid, really sexy, really homemakey kind of characters. And then the pendulum swings again. And so that's what I study, how film is a reflection of society, how it pushes society, how it is... an artifact in a lot of ways, and I find that really interesting.
It's really interesting, too, because there's always this difference between what gets talked about critically and what actually makes money, right?
So totally.
You were talking about heroines in the 20s, and I'm like, oh, Passion of Joan of Arc, but that probably didn't make a whole lot of money. Yeah.
Oh, and you're such a good film student to even mention it. I love that.
No, my roommate in grad school was a compilit major, so I know a lot of movies that I otherwise shouldn't. Yeah.
Well, usually when I lecture, I mention the budget and the box office return in an effort to say, well, it cost this many millions to make it, and it made this much, either more or less, and why that matters. One of the films on my list, I'll just bring it up because we were talking about Jennifer Lawrence, is Winter's Bone.
Winter's Bone, yeah.
So this is an indie film in 2010. It was one of her very first and sort of put her on the map as an actress. She got nominated for her first Oscar. And its budget was just under $2 million, and it made $16 million. So when we're in the world of The Last Jedi, a $16 million box office is like a disaster.
But it gave us Jennifer Lawrence.
It gave us J-Law, for sure, but its budget was $2 million. It made $16 million. That's a healthy return on your investment.
Yeah.
And those the space for those little indies where it's a truly feminist film, it's beautiful, it's stark, it's haunting, it's disturbing. That place is alive and well, I think, with streaming services and Netflix and all this. Mm-hmm. There is an opportunity for a lot of these smaller indie films, which there would never have been back in the 20s, and there wouldn't have even been in the 90s and early 2000s before we had this sort of huge opportunity for a lot of different places and film festivals popping up everywhere. Give an opportunity for these little tiny movies to really to get nominated for the Grand Jury Prize and Oscars. Yep. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
and
so
it's a nice, cheerful,
awesome.
It's a nice, cheerful film for winter.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, life triumphs.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not terribly miserable, but mostly miserable.
Yeah. All right. So speaking with Rachel Shavitz, you just heard her. Max Orr, we've got as well. Humanities.unc.edu for the Carolina Public Humanities. But we're talking about winter-themed movies and books.
Not
right?
necessarily
not
holiday-themed, but winter-themed. Yeah.
So we start with Winter's Bone, which is not a holiday-themed movie.
Mm-hmm. None of my choices
even are. In the remote slightest. Yeah, okay. So
I have a book that I always think about when I think about winter, and it's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. And, of course, it does have a little bit of a holiday in it because Father Christmas shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And the book, of course, is a not very veiled Christian theology all through it. But what I always found so magical about that book growing up was the feeling of warmth I got as I was sitting. This is a common theme in the books I brought. It being raised in Vermont, being in a cold winter place and reading about someone else's cold winter misery was always made me feel warm. And there was something about being all cozy and reading Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that I still remember. And when I think about winter books, that was the first one that came to mind.
You're just obsessively flipping through the last chapter of The Giver, aren't you? Just like reading that over and over and over again.
Yeah, so it's that's my first contribution. Rachel, did you bring another movie for us?
Sure. I also picked Groundhog Day.
Oh, nice.
So this is a film. One other thing I do that separates me from most film scholars and anyone who's taken seriously in film that I know of is I pick, like, movies that normal film scholars would never go for. And Groundhog Day is a great example of that.
It doesn't have subtitles?
No, it's not black and white and from France. No, it's Bill Murray. It's Harold Ramis. Yeah. It's the guys I grew up watching their films and loving and watching on repeat over and over and over. What I love about this film that I think is so interesting is the way it's been, you know, popular release and right away wasn't amazing, which happens with all the best films. Mm-hmm. But after people started watching it, it became, it spoke to lots of different kinds of religious groups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This idea of, is it an allegory for spiritual transcendence? Mm-hmm. Is it an allegory for purgatory? So for the, I think everybody knows, but the premise is one day a really not so great dude wakes up and relives the same miserable day over and over and over again until he becomes a better man.
Yeah.
And so there became this marketing campaign in the aftermath of, are you living the same life over and over?
Oh, wow.
Are you in purgatory, and what can you do to make yourself better to escape from the same old?
Yeah. I love that you focused on the winter aspect of that film. It never really occurred to me, of course. But and if you live in the northern climes, as I just mentioned, the idea of interminable winter is certainly in Punxsutawney.
And bear in mind, he steps in a giant puddle of water really early on in the day. So the entire rest of the day,
absolutely,
like his leg is frozen from the knee down.
That's a doozy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One of my best friends from high school is randomly like close personal friends with Stephen Tobolowsky.
No.
I don't know how they know each other, but it's the weirdest thing to just see Ned Ryerson pop up on my Facebook
feed. Ned
Ryerson,
I don't know who he's talking about.
Apparently he like crushed his audition.
Oh, he's
like,
great.
Like they had
yeah.
a whole nother idea for that character, and he came in doing the...
You have another idea
doozy.
For that.
And he just crushed it. And they were
that's
like,
great.
And I think they even expanded the character based on his performance. They're, oh, we got to work this guy in some other places
because
he's so amazing.
That's great. Next book?
Well, yeah, I just keeping with the up, there are a couple uplifting books I would just mention briefly. Ethan Frome by Edith Wharton has a wonderful winter tobogganing scene in it for the uplifting happiness. We also
are we
have,
to the point where the purgatory movie is going to be the least depressing recommendation that the two of you combined suggest?
But I would also like to mention the illustrated memoirs of Fabor de Fauer with Napoleon in Russia. He was a German soldier who was able to traveled with Napoleon all through the Russian campaign and drew these incredible sketches of his experiences, which were later colorized. And these sketches ended up being these wonderfully graphic illustrations. I remember looking at them as a kid. There's one for you, Aaron. You can see some very, very brutal winter conditions. And what I again, it's only for the Schadenfreude aspect of it that I love these because
unschadenfreude,
as
the case may be in that picture.
So it's someone else suffering.
There's
this
a visual pun
terrible...
which no one will get if they're listening to this.
Yes, indeed. I forget we don't have great visuals on the radio, but if anyone is interested, it's a beautiful book and they're really, really interesting pictures. But again, they make me feel warm and cozy inside because it's like reading Jack London, you know, to build a fire and these where I'm always thinking, I'm so glad I'm not out in the cold. So that's why I picked these particular texts.
Awesome. We got to wrap up here in a second, but anything coming up that people ought to know about?
Well, there's going to be a holiday season. We've really done as much as we can do, getting our grades in and wrapping up our semester and having our big name change, Carolina Public Humanities. So I'm just looking forward to next semester and coming back with you on the other side of the year and telling you about an incredible roster of programs we have coming up in for the spring. But if anyone is interested, they can go to humanities.unc.edu and get a look at what we're doing in the spring right now, and we're open for registrations.
Awesome. So humanities.unc.edu, check it out. Rachel Shavitz, thank you so much. Max Orr, thank you so much.
Thank
Happy
you.
New Year, Merry Christmas, and we'll see you in 3 weeks.
Thanks, Aaron.